following podcast has adult themes and some strong language.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of season 2 of Excuse the Jazz. If you've got this far, thank you. This week I'm going to talk about birthdays. It's a shared experience, at least in Western culture. Every person who gets to 12 months old has a day to celebrate the anniversary of the time they entered the world. I've never really thought about why we do this to ourselves. We got older, yay! So I did a bit of digging. Obviously, before calendars, there were no birthdays because there was no way to track them. It is thought the earliest reference to a birthday was around 3000 BCE, but this is disputed because it was thought the pharaoh it related to was celebrating his birth as a god and not as a human. Pagans believed a person had an evil spirit that became present on the day of their birth. It is believed the ancient Greeks, following an Egyptian tradition, lit candles in response to these spirits, as it represented a light in the darkness. The birthday candle tradition is therefore a form of protection. Not only candles, but family and friends would gather around the birthday person and protect them from harm with good thoughts and well wishes. They would bring gifts to bring even more happiness to ward off the evil spirits. Early Christianity did not accept birthdays as a tradition as it was a pagan ritual. However, around the 4th century, they adopted the practice and started to celebrate the birth of Christ. We had candles, presents, and a bit of a party, but what about the cake, I hear you ask? I mean, I don't. I'm talking to an empty room, but I digress. It took a long time before cake to become part of the traditions. We need to go to Germany in the late 18th century for this and Kinderfest. This was a party for German kids, or Kinder, and featured a birthday cake with a candle, each representing each year of their life. They would blow out the candles and make a wish. Thanks to the Industrial Revolution, those lovely sweet cakes that them rich folks had became far cheaper, and therefore more affordable to the likes of me. Well, until recently, where I can't buy a cake big enough to put all my candles on. Comedian Bob Hope said, "You know you're getting old when the candles cost more than the cake." You left me last time being physically assaulted for the first time in my life. It was a week's at first. I'd never got anyone fired before, never been smitten with someone at first sight, never swore or been coerced in a business meeting, and I'd never had a fist in my face before. My first reaction was defensiveness, ready to hit back because she hadn't hurt me at all. Catherine was in shock. I think it was an impulsive act. I said to her calmly that she was fired and she ran out. I looked in the mirror because I was absolutely fine. At least she hadn't hurt me, I thought, and that was the moment I felt my nose and right eye were going to explode. In fact, I could start to see some swelling. I soaked a paper towel under the cold water and put it against my eye. My first thought was I had to get home in case the swelling got worse and I was unable to drive. Niles was holed up in the conference room, so I went into my office, logged out my laptop and picked up my bag. I didn't even clear the desk. I then went into the OM's room to quickly explain what happened and I left it with him to sort out Catherine. I was on the road within 15 minutes of the assault. That evening was ice, more ice, shock, tears and then an early night. Gave myself the gift of sleep by taking painkillers that make you drowsy, and apart from being woken up by frequently accidentally laying on my right side, I actually had a good night's sleep for me. I had a shock though when I saw my face in the mirror the next morning. My eyes swollen up and it was black and purpley all around it, including the bridge of my nose. It wasn't prize boxer style. I could still see, but no amount of makeup was going to cover the swelling. I had a go anyway. I made 2 mistakes the day before. Staying in a room with obviously someone who had issues, and more importantly, abandoning my laptop and phone in the office. I had to go in, even though I thought I deserved a day working from home. There was a plus side. It was sunny and so a perfect excuse to wear sunglasses. I wasn't quite ready to take them off when I entered the building either. I knew from his car outside Niles was already in, and I was building myself up to explaining why I finished work early. What I didn't expect was an ambush as soon as I walked through the office door. He leapt up and started shouting that I hadn't answered my phone, my work phone, which I'd left in my office drawer. I was totally on the defensive because I didn't expect him to be so angry. Plus, it was his fucking fault I was in that position in the first place, him and his stupid rules. I slammed his coffee down on the desk and did the same to mine. He demanded to know why I was ignoring him. "I am not," I replied somewhat facetiously because I knew full well he meant yesterday. What the fuck did he care? I went into my drawer, picked up the phone and waved it at him. I told him I was sorry, I left in a rush, and I wasn't sorry, of course. He looked at me and the phone, but was still cross. He stood in the middle of the room, just under the main light, and asked I come to him so he could see. Like a stupid puppy, I just obeyed the instruction and immediately regretted it. I say regret in past tense because at the time I was not really thinking straight at all. He carefully removed my sunglasses, placed them on his desk, and then stood stupidly close to me. He placed his hands on either side of my face and carefully tilted my head up. He is a good 5-6 inches taller than me, so he had to lean down, and he said nothing. I tried not to look him in the eyes, but it's really hard when someone is staring intently into yours. Well, one of them at least. I could feel his warm breath on my face, and I swallowed down a joke that a few days ago he couldn't even shake hands, but now it was okay to breathe on me. I didn't know how long we were in that position for. Probably seconds, but it felt so much longer. That's a cliche. I know it's a cliche. Don't even know how best to describe it. I felt like I was on fire. Oh, another cliche. I might want to give this writer thing a miss. Then the truth hit me like a thunderbolt. More fucking cliches. I thought, he thinks I'm going to sue. It was like someone splashed ice water on me, and I removed his hands away from my head and headed back to my desk. I said I was fine, but I wasn't. There's nothing like a bit of unrequited feelings to make you feel like a piece of shit. As I sat down, he disappeared out of the office. I picked up my work phone to see what was so important. There were 15 missed calls, all from him. Then the inevitable happened. A meeting to make a statement of the events of the day before. Apparently, it needed the OM, Naz, and Sarah, with the latter to take notes. No wonder that place was sinking fast with the time wasting. I don't know why they didn't just shut the factory and call an early weekend. The meeting was more humiliating than actually being hit. I had to repeat the order of events twice, and it was repeated back to me. Honestly, whenever I feel down, I'm going to remember the time when I sat in a room and told everyone how I was a pathetic, ugly liar and caused people to lose their jobs. Fuck, I would have smacked me in the face too. When the torture was finally over, I was asked if I was pressing charges. Of course I wasn't. Niles told me I should. I just said it was my decision and I choose not to. Maybe he was hoping if I put all the blame on Catherine, then I wouldn't blame the company. But I do. Okay, Catherine threw the punch, but all that stuff that led there, that was down to the organisation. Being scared of losing their jobs, the takeover, the fear of strangers, the spreading of the lies, then on top of that, it's your job, demotion, or your relationship. It sucks big time. She, nor I, created that toxicity. We were just the ones bearing the brunt of it. As we left the office, Niall said to me that it should go without saying none of what Catherine said was true. Then why? I asked him. Do you need to say it? I went to my spot at the back of the building for around 10 minutes longer than I anticipated. It took me a while to snap back from that meeting. I was counting the hours down to the weekend, where I had exciting plans, like a children's party, which just reminded me that I should speak to Ems later. Maybe if I didn't, I wouldn't have to go. Knowing Ems, though, I'd have to phone her from the afterlife before getting out of that one. When we got back in the office, there was an empty Amazon box on Niles' desk and a new coffee machine on mine. Niles said it was for me because I was keeping Starbucks in business. A coffee machine. Not a cheap filter coffee thing either. It was all proper singing, dancing, not much change from £500 machine. I said this would be brilliant in the staff room, but shouldn't we be reducing spending? Shook his head. This was my personal coffee machine for this office. And he paid for it out of his own money. Was he serious? I actually asked him. He confirmed he was, but he expected some use of it while he was here. I thanked him profusely, but reality crept in almost immediately. He's scared I'm going to sue. I wasn't, but maybe I wouldn't declare that just yet. English clergyman Thomas Fuller said, "A gift with a kind countenance is a double present." It's just sometimes hard to know if it's a kind countenance. When that working week eventually finished, I flashed my work phone to Niles and told him to ring if necessary. I hoped he wouldn't, but he said he was planning to work, so what could I do? I couldn't leave it in my drawer again and face his wrath on Monday. I drank a huge glass of wine when I got into the house and phoned Ems. She immediately said, "I hate my job, the party tomorrow is killing me, and I'm probably splitting up with my husband." I said, "I was responsible for 5 people losing their jobs, I've been punched in the face, and I had a massive schoolgirl crush on my manager's manager." There was a pause before she said, "I shouldn't have spoken to you like that." I agreed. "I'll come over now," I told her she'd better. I put wine and Prosecco in the fridge. It was going to be a long night and I was so ready for it. Within minutes of MC my black eyes, she texted a photo to Izzy and she was on her way round. All I needed was an act of violence for them to see me. There was much to talk about. Ems is having a really tough time with Simon, hence the stroppy phone call, hence her laying into me when she really wanted to lay into him. Still, not acceptable, but I was honest how it made me feel, and we agreed it wouldn't happen again. More importantly, she doesn't think I'm selfish, which is always good to know. I will always open my door to her, but what about the demon child? Nope, I'd worry about that when I needed to worry about it. All too soon, this conversation turned to me, and I updated them from the party to today. I had a lot to say, about 5 episodes worth. They were fuming about Catherine. If Ems ever meets Catherine, a punch to the face will be the least of her problems. It was lovely though, just having people on my side. Of course, they said everything I did was right, and I'm not sure that's the case. They're not living with the intense guilt at 3 a.m. Especially now, as there's every chance the factory will close anyway unless I find a magic money tree. I should speak to Theresa May. Then the talk turned to Niles. Izzy could be a private investigator because within minutes of me giving his full name, she had found him. I don't think they believed he was the hot guy I described, but neither did I until I saw him in the flesh. Just had to take my word for it. Like they had to take my word for it that there was nothing there from him. "I mean a coffee machine," Izzy kept saying, but I reminded them I'd been buying coffee a week. Plus, he believed I was going to sue. I mean, he hadn't actually said that, but it seemed blindingly obvious. And as Izzy put it, Americans are litigious as fuck. Of course I got teased, it was bound to happen, but it was good natured. I was just so happy that they were there and they loved me and I loved them, and I realised I was definitely going to a 7-year-old's birthday party with a hangover. Canadian actor Mary Pickford said, "I was forced to live far beyond my years when I was a child. I've reversed the order and tend to remain young indefinitely." Definitely feeling that one. Samuel was 7. I didn't quite know how that happened. As I finished a leftover pizza that Saturday morning, I realised that even being stuck in a house for over a year didn't make time slow down. It just keeps going increasingly faster each year. When people talk about their life flashing before their eyes before death, I now think they are just talking about their actual life. 30 onwards, and it doesn't matter if you get another 70 years on the planet, it's still at breakneck speed. In the 30-year-old film, Kirstie Swanson's Buffy utters the immortal line, "All I want to do is graduate from high school, go to Europe, marry Christian Slater and die." There's a part of me that still feels like that. I mean, I left high school a long time ago and I live in Europe, but the sentiment's still there. Okay, admit it, I was being maudlin, which is bloody ridiculous because it was Saturday morning and I had a really good Friday night. The thought of being in a room full of 7-year-olds, though, didn't fill me with happiness. But I was reliably assured by Ems it wouldn't just be 7-year-olds. The children's ages were between 2 and 10. Happy days. I wondered what Niles was doing and then slapped myself, which was really stupid because I hit my right side and the pain was acute. I made a mental note to myself to metaphorically slap myself and not actually do it. Then I made a further mental note to stop thinking about someone who was not thinking about me. The party, and even as I said it, I did inverted commas with my fingers. Just imagine I did. Party was in a community hall. Right at the beginning when this was talked about a couple of months ago, I suggested to Ems that pubs rented rooms out and some even had skittle alleys. She laughed as if I was joking. The community hall did have an enclosed open-air playground, which had lines for football, tennis, baseball and, let's just say, all the games. Here I was in a community hall, blowing up balloons ready for the onslaught of tiny humans. I even considered that these children may be not friends of Samuel's, but his disciples, all plotting to bring around the complete destruction of the planet. I could stop them by just pointing out the humans doing a good enough job of that anyway and distract them with a fruit shoot. At least if I'd failed, I wouldn't have to worry about saving that fucking factory. That was the other thing. No swearing. Problem is, I swear in everyday life. Not every sentence, not every conversation. It's just part of my lexicon. I've been put on high alert not to because apparently it's frowned upon in front of children. Why would anyone want me to be in a room full of them? That's just asking for trouble. As I distract myself for the impending doom by putting my valuable breath into stretchable rubber, I felt a tiny hand tap my back. I wasn't a huge fan of that either. I went to turn around, but suddenly Samuel was standing in front of me and I jumped. He reached out his hand for the balloon I was blown up, so I quickly secured it and handed it to him. He stared at me for a moment and I was terrified, but he quickly disappeared. I froze to the spot for seconds until I heard my name being called by Ems offering me a coffee. I tried to give myself a job for the party so I wouldn't feel so out of my depth. I stood in the kitchen, starting to make teas and coffees for the grown-ups, but Ems pulled me out of there, stating I wasn't there for that. Unfortunately, she didn't make it clear what I was there for. Izzy had managed to escape by a long-planned, a long-planned trip up north to see the family. I couldn't really talk to Ems or Simon much because they were the hosts. Ems had included me in a conversation with a couple of other adults and had already asked why I didn't have children. People, please stop doing this. There could be a really sad and tragic reason that's really none of your business. I had the double whammy too. You must have so much more time and money. No to the answer of both. Why would I just be sat there twiddling my thumbs when I'm not working? I had other things. Like the book I wanted desperately to go back to before work had taken that from me the last few weeks. Plus money. This from two parents, both in good jobs, when I was doing everything on my own. They continued talking, but I wasn't really listening when out the corner of my eye, I saw a child push another. The bully said, "We don't want to play with you." And the other child looked crestfallen. I looked around and not one responsible adult saw or took action. I tried to interrupt them, but she was having a full-on conversation of the comp they wanted their children to attend. I then tried Simon and went towards him, but he looked at me with a full-on sneer and looked away. That I was surprised at, but there was nowhere I was going to approach him now. I looked out to the child that had been bullied. He had moved to a corner and watched as his so-called friends played. My heart went out to him. The poor child I'd likened to the tool of the devil and given him a nickname was an outcast at his own birthday party. I went to him, crouched down so I was at his level, and asked if he was okay. He nodded in answer, but this brave child was trying to hide every bit of hurt that was written all over his face. I asked him if he fancied an ice cream, and he smiled and nodded. I caught Em's eye and pointed as I took Samuel by the hand out to the hall, into the park, and bought him an ice cream. We sat on a park bench with our 99s with extra chocolate sauce and chatted about nothing for a few minutes. Before I broached the subject of what had just happened, he admitted he didn't have many friends at school and the ones he did would always go off with the other boys if they were told to. I admitted I didn't have any friends at work either and it was tough. He looked surprised at that. He told me not to be so silly because I was funny. I told him I wasn't joking and it's hard being so totally awesome that people treat us differently sometimes. He liked that. Then came the bombshell. He He hadn't really wanted the party, but he heard his mum and dad say they would stay together until the party, so not to ruin his birthday. I asked him if he was sure, and he told me how they were fighting all the time, and he heard them say it when he was pretending to be asleep. This was new information. Ems hadn't said it was final. They'd just been fighting, not definitely separating. I told him that whatever happened, his mum and dad and sister loved him very much, and that would never change. When we finished, I told him we had to go back to the party. He wasn't happy, but agreed. Not before he gave me a big hug and told me I was his favourite auntie. When we got in, I had an idea which could have landed me into all sorts of trouble, but talked it through with Samuel anyway. One of the kids kicked the ball and I walked over to pick it up. I shouted for them to all gather round us as we were going to have a proper game. Even the older kids who were playing in the hall with other toys stood up and headed to the playground. All conditioned. Don't tell me that schools don't brainwash kids. I announced we were picking teams and Samuel would be a team captain and I would be the other. I prayed to goodness there would be an odd number so I could step out. Samuel picked his first team member and with the help pointing with his eyes, I started to pick my team. The last person left to be picked was the bully. I know that is hard. I was always picked last too. And I'm not Rebecca De Mornay from The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, so I made him the team captain and I became a referee. Two things happened. The kids played a game of football and I suddenly had a role in the party. I tried to learn all the kids' names and be supportive and cheer them on. Quite a few adults joined in the cheering too, and it actually wasn't as terrifying for me as I thought it'd be. Weirdly, Samuel's team won, but that was mainly because they did. I told them I'd never seen such an amazing bunch of footballers, and I'd been to watch Cardiff City, Man United and Liverpool play. Haven't. Couldn't imagine anything more boring. Then I made them give each other high fives because they were all so good. Even the bully joined in. Now I know I didn't solve anything. On Monday morning, things were gone back to the way they were before, because that's just the way of the world. Even the British and German soldiers in World War I called a truce for a small time for a game of football. I had a lot of high fives and hugs that day before each of the children left with their gift bags. That totaled hundreds of pounds. Bet you're thinking I spent a lot of time applying hand sanitizer. And you would be right. I couldn't move for Samuel, though, and we worked together to pack everything away. Ems asked me back to her house, which Simon didn't look too pleased about, but I was ready for rest and relaxation, so declined. Samuel gave me a big hug before I left and thanked me for being nice. Now, there was something else I felt guilty about, so from now on, the child of Ems will be referred to as Samuel and not in league with the devil, unless that's what the devil wants me to think. When I got home, I poured myself a large glass of wine, put the large slice of birthday cake on a plate and settled into a comfy chair. There was a message from Ems thanking me for coming, another from Izzy asking me if Cardiff was still standing or Samuel's plan worked. Yes, I know what I said. I'm just repeating what Izzy said. I was replying to both when I heard my phone ring, except it wasn't my phone, it was the work phone. My heart sunk and I thought of letting it go to voicemail, except it was Niles, so I couldn't. After apologising for ringing, he asked me what all the boxes were in the basement. What boxes? And more importantly, what fucking basement? Comedian Stephen Wright said, "I intend to live forever. So far, so good." Too early on a Sunday morning. It was 11 a.m, but that's too early. I pulled up outside my workplace ready to investigate the mystery of the boxes in the newly discovered basement. Maybe basement didn't mean the same thing in America. Maybe it wasn't a basement. He just found a portal to another dimension. Maybe he said it as an excuse to see me because he'd completely fallen for me. Yeah, more likely to be the other dimension thing. I went for the casual jeans, t-shirt, trainers, perfectly styled hair and makeup look. It was Sunday. I suppose I didn't think he would do the same. Minus the makeup, of course. It was a bit of a culture shock to see him looking like a mere mortal. Well, if those mere mortals were good looking anyway. He had made me a coffee from the swanky machine and told me how he investigated the building to make sense of it. It hadn't. I think he was a little surprised when I told him about the 7-year-old birthday party I was made to attend and the game of soccer I'd organised. He congratulated me on my tenacity and bravery. He hated his own daughter's parties. After the civilities, I followed him down towards the corridor that ran adjacent to the factory, and a door that I don't think I've ever noticed before. I was shown here the day I'd started, but I hadn't come down here since. Certainly hadn't taken it all in. I think I would have assumed it a cupboard anyway. He opened the door wide and actioned for me to enter. I asked him if I went in there, would nobody see me until my body was found on the mountain by a couple hiking. Deadpan, he told me that we were in a food factory. My body would never be found. It made me smile as I bravely went through the door, down the staircase, into the room he called the basement. To be fair, he wasn't wrong. It was quite a large space full of boxes, which didn't seem to be in any order, all covered in black marker pen, which stated what it was and the date. In the UK, you are supposed to keep business records for about 7 years, but that's not strictly true, and some need to be kept for 10 years. It's not an exact science, and that's why professional accountants get the big money. For the majority that aren't, then it's far better to keep records longer than to be caught out. However, I could see boxes with dates going back to 2003, and it seemed all that happened is they closed the records for the year and dumped the boxes down here to go mouldy. All I did was to confirm what Niles already thought, and it didn't look good for us. If this is how the organisation kept records, then it probably wasn't being run very well. I think it sunk in, though, that I hadn't been there for long, so genuinely didn't know about it. I was intrigued, so I opened the boxes that stated bank reconciliations from 2010 and looked to see how healthy the situation was then. This building had been the unofficial head office for 3 factories. Now, this was the last one standing. I looked at the bank statements and matched them up with the different factories, but were others that didn't seem to match up under different names. I started to trace what had happened to him. Now, this I missed. When you had to find answers from company records, but they were all in different boxes and you had to put all the clues together to find your answer. Having everything on a computer wasn't the same. I showed these to Niles and said it might be worth checking out what happened to him. That was our game for the next 2 hours, finding the next step, finding the boxes, pulling them apart to see what was next. Honestly, it sounds like a nightmare, but it was fun. Apart from stopping every 2 minutes to apply hand sanitizer. By the end, I had one bank account which I couldn't trace, and it was really suspicious for reasons I can't explain. Not because I don't know, I just can't legally. There was over £150,000 in there, which wasn't much when the company was thriving a few years ago. Could make a real difference now. I thought I got a little too relaxed in Niall's company after our time playing Columbo, because I said we should split the money 50-50, and he just looked at me strangely. I immediately admitted I was joking, and of course that couldn't happen. He just smiled and said, I know, absolute swine trying to scare me. I asked if he knew a way to find out what happened to the money, but Niall said he didn't. He did, however, know a whole legal department that would. I made a huge salad in case the day ran long and offered Niall half a lunch, got water and went outside. We sat on the benches to the side of the building. The ones I would never been allowed near in the normal working day. He suddenly declared that nobody liked me there. It wasn't informative, but I also think he didn't say it to be cruel. I agreed. Well, apart from Sarah. He asked me why. I retaliated with, why do you think? Okay, I was fishing a little bit too about what he thought of me. He replied he didn't know. When he arrived, I've got the office cleaned, I've gotten coffee and food, and I've been punched in the face by a person who I'd never press charges against. Okay, serve me right. I want to know what he thought of me personally, not give me a recap of what happened in the last week. I said my thoughts were that they saw me as being successful, coming from a city, having a wanky company car, coming into a new role, and then with the lies being spread, when certain people knew how suspicious I was of them, it all added up. Except I wasn't really successful, and I would guarantee most of them had a better life than I did. It was all perception. Well, apart from the fact I wasn't attractive or that clever or indeed likeable. I didn't mention the clever or likability bit. That was plain. He nodded along, not sure if he knew what to make of it. He safely decided to change the subject and admitted that he loved the view at the back of the building. He was talking about my spot. Walked around to it and said nothing for about 2 minutes. It was glorious. The afternoon sun was shining up the mountain and making the grass look like it had a hue of 1,000 greens. No traffic, no noise, just clean, fresh air and beauty as far as the eye could see. It was magical. I thought how happy I was to share the spot with him. He probably thought that Jess should just fuck off home now because she'd done her part. Just as I opened my mouth to say I was going, he suddenly turned to look at me. He said, "I'm so bored." That's enough from me. Thank you so much for listening. It just leaves me to say, please come back. I'm not needy or anything, but do what you want. Also, a lot of this stuff is from the internet, and did you know the internet can lie? You can find me on Instagram at excusethejess, and let's do this again soon.
Excuse the Jess was written and performed by Jackie J. Sarah. It is a Deliciously Bright production. If you enjoyed this, please click follow and give us a 5-star review or donate via Buy Me a Coffee. All details, including full credits, can be found on the website excusethejess.com.